Welcome to Mizzou Week on the Savage Pads podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle. And on today's show, former Georgia running back Brendan Douglas is joining the show to discuss his flip from Georgia Tech to Georgia, his flip against Missouri as a Georgia player in 2013, and the key for this Georgia offense coming off a great performance against Florida. Then Corey Amick returns, and so does our Savage Pads Savagery segment, where we will take some shots at Florida, given that the Dogs earned us another year of bragging rights in that rivalry. Corey will also share his thoughts on Georgia-Florida, as will frequent show correspondent Caleb Gwynn before his weekly Pick 6 segment, and a look ahead to Georgia-Mizzou. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man oh man, mano y mano.
He definitely sticks out, reminds me of myself. As close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job of bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC Championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I would say he was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads podcast. Former UGA running back Brendan Douglas is on the line. Brendan, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. It's good to be here.
It is great to have you. And I do want to discuss your time at UGA, but before I do, I want to find out kind of what led you to Georgia in the first place. Can you walk our listeners through the series of events that unfolded to lead you to flip your commitment from in-state rival Georgia Tech to UGA at the last minute?
Yeah, it was a tough decision. Ultimately, I think Coach Rick was a big driving force in my decision. Mm-hmm. I went to a bunch of camps in high school, my junior and senior year of high school, to all these different universities around the Southeast, really. And, something that stuck out about Coach Rick, and, we were at the camp and all the attendees were there, and it was right before the camp, and, coaching staff, attendees, and everything, and Coach Rick called everybody up, and, he led us in prayer there before the camp started. And it was something that really stuck out to me and meant a lot to me growing up in a Christian household. And, we said our prayers all the time. And, it kind of felt like home to me. And I knew if Georgia was going to come along that, I wanted to be there and be a part of that. And so ultimately that's one of the main reasons why I chose Georgia. Also I just felt like I got along with coaching staff a little bit better, and just felt like I fit in there in Georgia. And so those are a couple of reasons why.
Mm-hmm. And as a high schooler, you clearly had your reasons for coming, for off the field reasons. But as far as the on the field opportunity, I mean, you committed to a team that already had guys like Todd Gurley and Keith Marshall at your position. What were your expectations for yourself going into your freshman year?
It was a big surprise. It was for me. I'll be honest with you. Going in and playing right away, I knew I wanted to go in and work as hard as I could, do everything I could to get on the field and play. A couple injuries here or there, and, all of a sudden I was the guy, and J.J. Green and I ended up, playing in a lot of those games. But, I was always preparing as if I was the starter and, ready to go whenever they called my number. And, I got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff for having me ready to go. And, it was a fun year for sure. And, I'll never forget when my number was called. It was like the second game of the year, I think. I had to sit out against Clemson that year at Clemson. But then the second game of the year against South Carolina, that was my first time playing, and it was awesome. It was an awesome experience. I was fortunate to get to play football there, and I loved every bit of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned that South Carolina game. A few games later, against Tennessee, Keith Marshall went down. Todd Gurley was out going into the next week, and we have Missouri. And that was the first game where it really felt like you were the primary back for an entire game. And, of course, J.J. was working as well. Now, you had a touchdown in that game that still finds its way onto the video board in Athens. And I know many of our listeners want to hear about that one. Can you walk us through the flip play from your point of view as the ball carrier on that one?
Yeah, that was really a crazy week in itself. I mean, you know, when Todd gets suspended, I hate to bring that up, but, you know, that happened. And, you know, Coach Rick came in the meeting room early that week and told us, you know, hey, you know, Todd's not going to be able to play. And, you know, if anybody was shocked in the room, it was me, because I was probably the most affected by that situation. So, but anyways, yeah, I got to play a good bit that game. And the flip, you know, it was just a toss to the left, and honestly, it was blocked perfectly. You know, it was wide open, and I had a bunch of green grass in front of me. I got to give credit to the offensive line and the fullback for leading the way, but you know, got there close to the end zone, and it was me and defensive back one-on-one, and, you know, I thought he was going to go low, and so I was just going to kind of hop over him a little bit.
Right.
And turns out he didn't. And, you know, I ended up hitting my, you know, lower leg on his shoulder pad, and just started flipping. And, you know, I just remembered, I was, this might not turn out good, but I'm going to hold on to the ball and, you know, hopefully get in the end zone. But
right.
And I really had no idea it was as crazy as it was until after the game was over. You know, everybody came up to me after the play. I was like, oh, my gosh, that was awesome. You know, that was crazy. And I was like, oh, I didn't think it was that crazy. And, until after the game when I got all the pictures and saw a video of it. And it was pretty cool. But, you know, all the running backs in the room kind of got on to me. They're like, man, if you were real good, you'd have landed it.
Yeah. yeah, you got up there, man. It was like, first off, you already have a impressive vertical jump, and then it's like the hit boosted you up in the air a little bit more. So it was like a double jump, like Mario jump. And yeah, unfortunately, you weren't able to stick it, but glad you weren't hurt on that one.
Yeah, I think Todd, with all his hurdling, I think he hurdled somebody a couple weeks later, and then all of a sudden, you know, hurdling got cool, and
yeah,
everybody was doing it. So
you brought hurdling back.
Yeah, I deserve a little bit of credit for that.
yeah, because ever since then, it's been, I mean, DeAndre Swift hurdles someone about every three or four
it's
games,
like,
it feels like.
The cool thing to do nowadays, I feel like everybody is trying to do that.
Yeah, but you were hurdling before it was mainstream.
Yeah, I guess so.
yeah. One thing, before this interview, I was going back, watching, making sure I knew what I was talking about on some of the plays, and I did see on that Mizzou touchdown that it was the little toss sweep, and we brought that back against Florida, a different kind of variation of it, but tossed it out wide to Swift, and felt like the running game benefited from a more of an emphasis on some of the outside runs. As a running back, do you think that kind of play calling opens up things even for the inside runs for Swift and Herrien?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, switching it up a little bit, not just running power, you know, over and over again, or zone over and over again, a little outside zone or toss sweep or something, definitely can open it up. And, you know, the more variation that you have in your run game, the better. And, you know, with that offensive line in front of all those guys, it doesn't hurt for sure. So,
yeah. Well, it always seemed like your teammates were especially fond of you. Every time you made a play like that, whether it was that one or remember against South Carolina that first game you mentioned, you broke a tackle or two on a pretty long run late in the game. And, of course, against Florida, you did the same thing. And the entire sideline would just go crazy. Can you explain how you were able to walk into such a star-studded program and assert yourself not only as a playmaker but also as a leader in that locker room?
You know, I just think taking it, you know, day by day and, you know, really working your tail off and doing whatever you can to help the team. You know, I think that's how you slowly earn respect of your teammates, and you know, they appreciate that hard work. And you could kind of, you know, that's something I love the most about all the big plays that I was able to make is the reaction of my teammates. Mm-hmm. And it's just awesome to think about. And it's the ultimate team sport, and you know, they were all happy for me getting in there and making a play. And you know, they saw the work that I was putting in, and you know, just it was pretty awesome to be a part of that. So,
mm-hmm. And you mentioned that work that you've been putting in off the field. Someone who's taken a similar path and has kind of been in that similar role to you on this Georgia team is UGA senior Brian Herrien. Much like you, Brian was often overlooked early on due to a lack of hype from the high school recruiting services. But also, much like you, Brian has proven that he's an invaluable piece of a team that's absolutely loaded at his position. Having practiced alongside Brian Herrien during your senior season, what can you tell our listeners about him as a competitor and as an athlete?
Yeah, man, he's really grown up. And really, I talked to a couple of guys who were on the team as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's really becoming a leader and, you know, starting to lead the team a good amount. And it's crazy how well he's been able to do with, you know, so much talent there and, you know, kind of behind the scenes. And he didn't play a couple games, but he still came out and, you know, showed that he deserves it. And, you know, props to him. He's really had a heck of a season, and it's going to help him for sure coming up in a couple months with NFL,
mm-hmm.
you know, potential. So that's awesome for him, and, you know, super happy for him. And it sounds like he's got a bright future in front of him.
Mm-hmm. And last question for you, Brennan. Georgia's got to win out to make the college football playoff, and that starts with this weekend's matchup against Missouri. What, in your opinion, will be key for this Georgia offense to continue having the success that they had against Florida last weekend?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously running the ball, being able to establish the run, you know, that helps for sure. You know, I think the receivers got to play big. You know, Cager had a big game this weekend against Florida. If he can continue that, and you know, I think ultimately, I think Jake Fromm's the best leader in college football, and
mm-hmm.
He could lead this team and get them on the right track, and you know, just keep playing like they did on Saturday. Honestly, I mean, you know, it was just almost a totally different offense, and you know, everybody was getting upset and stuff about the offense, but you know, that Kentucky game, I kind of, you know, it was a monsoon out there, so
right,
definitely tough conditions for the offense, but you know, I think they're back on the right track, and you know, it could be a really fun rest of the season. And you know, dog faithful, you know, keep your faith, and you know, I think we're still in it for sure. You know, everybody was very discouraged after that South Carolina game, but I knew it was a long season, and you know, honestly, sometimes a mid-season loss like that can help you moving forward. And I think they got a real chance. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, Brendan, I appreciate you taking a moment of your time to join the show. I know our listeners enjoyed hearing from you. I enjoyed speaking with you, and we wish you the absolute best, both in your life and in your career, man.
I appreciate it, man. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs. I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die, till I die. All right, Savage Pads regular Corey Amick returns to the show for a new Savage Pads Savagery segment before revisiting the UGA offense and looking ahead to the remainder of the season. Welcome back, Corey.
Hey, Dad. Thanks for having me again.
Dude, it's always good to have you. And I can't lie, I was hesitant to roast Florida for the longest time when it looked like they were playing better ball than us. But the Dawgs are back on top, and that gives us roasting privileges again. But first off, Corey, before we get to that, as we discussed last week, this game took place right around Halloween. And I am curious, what were your favorite costumes you saw on the field on Saturday?
All right, so I have two that I think were some pretty great get-ups. First, and probably would also win like the most terrifying award, was Dan Mullen's attempt at being Jeremy Pruitt. And I think it was, I forget if it was middle of the second quarter or like early in the third, when they had to burn a timeout on offense, and he just absolutely
lost
erupted
yes.
on that assistant coach. I think, you know, if he had like a fat suit and if the assistant coach was wearing a face mask that he could have pulled on, I think it probably would have been like the perfect angry Pruitt costume.
Okay. Yeah. He also dressed up as Jeremy Pruitt by losing to Georgia 2 years in a row.
Yes. So that adds up as well.
It's convincing. Yeah.
Secondly, and this one's been ongoing, but Florida's been wearing their DBU costumes since probably the first week of the season, and against the new and improved Georgia wide receiving corps, I think they kind of look like clowns. And then Cager summed it up the best, he summed it up best in his well-timed Instagram post following the game after a pretty outstanding performance against so-called DBU. So I would say they should probably hang up that costume for a little while.
Yeah, I don't think they brought the DBU costumes out for Saturday, because I didn't see, maybe they were wearing them and it was one of those costumes where you couldn't tell what they were wearing, but I didn't see anything resembling DBU out there. I did like seeing Jake Fromm dress up as the UPS man. He delivered out there. And oh yeah, Florida's defensive line that we've been hearing about, they all dressed up as ghosts. So didn't see any of them the whole game outside of really the first series. Oh, one last one from me. Todd Grantham dressing up as Anakin Skywalker. You got to bear with me on this one. So he started off with the good guys, right? And switched sides, but the character arc comes full circle when he ends up helping the good guys win at the end of the day, just like Darth Vader did in episode 6 of Star Wars for my Star Wars people out there. So I thought Todd Grantham's Anakin Skywalker costume was pretty cool also.
That's deep. I have my last one, probably my favorite UGA costume, but this is less of a costume and more of a Halloween persona. Did you see the video following the game? I don't know. I really hope that it was Malik Herring and not Kyaris Jackson, but all I saw was...
No, it was Malik. Yeah, it was Malik.
Okay, yeah. So Malik Herring doing his best gym dog impersonation for Halloween with that crisp back handspring. You know, it's him and some other guys were celebrating or running towards the student section to celebrate. And
yeah.
I'm no judge, but to be that large of a human and do that at full speed after a full Division I football game, I'm giving him a 10.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah, Richard LeCount and Malik Herring, for those of you that did not see it, did some gymnastics after the game on the field. Actually impressive. So a little shout out to the gym dogs by our players there, dressing up as them for Halloween. Well, Corey,
yeah.
On a more serious note, Florida fans all offseason have talked about Dan Mullen being an elite developer who can field competitive teams without recruiting nearly as well as Georgia. How do you feel last week's game will impact the recruiting struggles that enable this weird flex?
Well, you definitely nailed it there with the weird flex. I'm not sure the best pitch to a young, talented high school player is, hey, you aren't as good as the other guys, but we have a coach that specializes in the not-as-good guys, so come find your home here at the Swamp. I feel like if I'm a recruit and I'm sitting down there with an offer from Florida and from Georgia, and that's what they're pitching, and on the other side is Kirby sitting there with 2 straight wins against Florida, as well as a reasonable amount of, you know, anger on the sideline, but nothing like a wannabe Jeremy Pruitt. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm definitely leaning more towards the dogs, and so if your pitch to a young guy is that he's not that good, but he could be if he trusts in your okay coach that can't prove it in big games thus far, I feel like it's going to remain a weird flex and probably never really pay off for Florida there.
Yeah, it's an interesting flex to me because Florida has not recruited well under Dan Mullen. And then they're in the offseason, their fans will say, it doesn't matter because our coach is so good that he's going to win with the guys that he gets, no matter who those guys are. And then the game comes around, and in Georgia wins again, and then they say, well, we don't have talented enough guys yet. Just wait till we get his guys. And it's like, I thought he was so good that that you could win with whoever. So interesting flex by Florida fans that they have continued, by the way, on Twitter. I've had some interactions via the Savage Pads account. Give us a follow. But, yeah, they're still flexing on him being the guy that develops the lesser players that they don't need but like to have. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, after the game, Dan Mullen said that Florida's third down defense played well, even though Georgia's third down offense went 12 for 18, including several third and long conversions. Corey, if Dan Mullen is an offensive genius, how would you describe him as a defensive mind?
Well, first off, I just have to say third and Grantham, because that'll always encapsulate this game and most of Florida's defense for his tenure as long as he's there. But right. I think that Dan Mullen was so focused on when he was going to slide Emory Jones into the game for a single snap that he forgot that running like a soft zone on every single third down against our receivers, who coming into this game might have been lacking a little bit of confidence, probably was just not the right thing to do. But if that's all he's focused on is figuring out when he's going to slide the backup in, then it paid off for us. And I think his defensive mind reminds me a lot of Nick Marshall's loyalty, and that's because it's lacking.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying there. Yeah, the thing that's funny to me is that we've been worried about this group of Georgia receivers or what I keep hearing is their inability to break away in press coverage. They've had a hard time with that, definitely against South Carolina, and it's hard to tell in the Kentucky game, but they've had a hard time of that of recent. And against Florida, they sort of just didn't even test that by going into the soft zone regularly, and it paid off for Georgia. So again, full Anakin Skywalker story arc there for Todd Grantham, helping the good guys win, even though he's a bad guy. Okay, well, now that we've criticized Todd Grantham, we've criticized Dan Mullen, it's time to reevaluate a few of Georgia's coaches. And Corey, you and I have both been pretty hard on James Coley and Kirby Smart for the first half of the season. There's no getting around it. What are your thoughts on this coaching staff following that win against Florida?
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, Doug. I agree. We've been extremely hard on our coaches, and I think a lot of UGA fans that know the potential that we have and the talent that we have would agree with, being hard on the coaches. And one thing that I want to know is that when Kirby was being interviewed on the field, like immediately following the game, he called out people that were doubting the players, and like specifically Jake Fromm, talking about people that wanted to murder him, and obviously not, that type of murder, but as far as kind of just throwing him and the players under the bus as far as not being the right fit or not being good enough this season or whatever. But when I was expecting to feel some sort of conviction in his post-game speech, but I had none. And if he would have went on to say that, hey, our coaches made all these changes over the last few weeks, and here's how we came out differently, and our schemes worked, and blah, 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 like, I would have probably been a lot more convicted because he would have addressed, our particular bone we've been picking with them. But, Kirby's not the type of guy to take that moment away to brag on his guys, which shows how good of a coach he is. So, leaving all that aside, I was very impressed with how we came out and played, and specifically the game that James Coley called. Did he start the game out exactly like everyone predicted? Yes. But he also made adjustments from there. And I'm totally fine with us playing right into the knots of the defense for our first drive or two and then having a lot of changes occur when we realize that's not going to work. And so I think we got the ball outside a lot. We actually threw a good number of passes like across the middle. Obviously that long third down that Cager picked up early in the game was pretty much just bad coverage by Florida. But the fact that we're still running some sort of crossing route is a lot more promising, I think, to create some space for our receivers. And even the few times that James Cook got the ball, and just, I don't know, I definitely like the way that we're moving the ball around more. And I think one of the stat lines in the first quarter or second quarter was Fromm had completions over seven different guys, which when we have a bunch of young receivers that are probably untested, it's good to spread the ball around early because it doesn't allow the defense to just lock down one guy, which they probably should have against Cager this week. So overall, I'm feeling really good. I'm impressed that I think, you know, we all expected a total change of our offense and for it to be, look totally different. But practically speaking, that, you know, that's just not going to happen. And I think what we saw on Saturday gives me and I think a lot of other fans a lot of hope as far as what we will see going forward. As far as when the offense is clicking and when they're healthy, I think we do have a good enough scheme to put us in position to play and win these big games. But definitely, I'm happy. I'll say that I'm very content following this game.
Yeah, I'm also very content for the most part. It was very much like a Jim Chaney change as far as even last year. Look at the LSU game, and then you look at Florida, and from then on in the season, we didn't overhaul our offense. We didn't change it completely, but we made adjustments that helped us have success. And it's like we started running it outside this week. We started passing it to the running backs, giving the ball to DeAndre Swift in space. It clearly helped to have Lawrence Cager back. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But even the way we used Dominique Blaylock on the goal line, I mean, that was a really, really nice goal line play there that got him open, and later we had a two-point conversion that had multiple guys open. And so
yeah,
they made some great adjustments from the first half of the season after that bye week. And it, as a Georgia fan, it certainly gives you hope that they learn from their mistakes, whether they'll say that or not, whether they'll say that, you know, they didn't listen to the critics and all this. There's clearly still some changes going on in that program, and whether it's because they just watched the film or whether because they, you know, heard some people critiquing the play calling, it is immaterial. What matters is that there's changes going on, and if we see the kind of play calling and the kind of adjustments that we saw against Florida in the coming weeks, I think Georgia absolutely gets themselves back in a position where they're legitimately able to compete for an SEC championship and go from there. So it's very encouraging. And it wasn't just the offense. I mean, we haven't even talked about the defense, and it's like understood at this point that the defense is lights out. So we talk about the one thing that's iffy, but Georgia put together somewhat of a complete performance really for the first time this year. And now we face a final stretch of the regular season that begins with a night game at home against Missouri. Now, this Missouri team has beaten a team that we've lost in South Carolina. We're coming off a huge win. We've got Auburn next week, potentially have a rematch with Alabama or LSU in several weeks. Do you think this Georgia team, which has played its best in big games against Notre Dame and Florida, has what it takes to focus on Missouri with more marquee matchups coming up in the coming weeks?
I do. I think after hearing about, you know, the players-only meeting they had after the South Carolina game and just the way that the players have responded, either in like interviews or when they've been asked about, you know, the performance recently or outlook on the rest of the season, et cetera, I have a lot of faith in our guys to be focused, and I think they all know and truly understand that, you know, they have no more freebies this year. That, I mean, with the slate of teams we have in the top, you know, seven or eight right now, a two-loss conference champion, you know, even if that, I don't think there's a way into the playoff.
No.
If we throw a game against Mizzou or Auburn or any of these teams coming up, and so I think that they know that and they understand that, and so I think they're going to come out focused. I'm sure here and there, you know, there'll be lapses and missed assignments, and that's just a part of playing in a league like the SEC where on any week any team can win. But I'm excited, especially for our offense, to kind of get a chance to show off, like, not how different it is, but how good they can be when they're healthy and when they're running on all cylinders. And I think a defense like Missouri should be exciting for the guys to kind of show off what they can do. And I would love for the offense to win us a game against Missouri. Not because our defense gives up points or doesn't play well, but just because our offense scores so well and so efficiently that Mizzou just has no chance from the get-go. So I had a lot of faith. I had a lot of faith in them. I think Kirby's locked in. I think Coley's moving in the right direction. And so if it comes down to just execution, I'm definitely confident in our players to get it done.
Yeah, I agree, Corey. I get the feeling, man. Man, I get the feeling that that big win over Florida is going to propel us into a run here. Much like 2012, much like last year. It feels like that game is where things shift one way or the other from season to season. And it ended on such a high note, and everyone's so pumped up, and it seems like there's some confidence building. Everyone's locked in, like you said. I like that phrase, locked in. I think Kirby certainly is. I think he's got the players locked in. I certainly hope so. And I certainly think they've learned their lesson after that South Carolina game is from a preparation standpoint. And so I don't think they're going to take any opponent lightly. I hope I'm right about that, but we'll find out on Saturday. Corey, again, appreciate your input. Appreciate you coming on the show to talk with me about that. Thanks again, man.
Yeah, Doug. Go Ducks.
All right, and now my good friend and our expert analyst, Caleb Gwynn, rejoins the show. We're going to break down the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Florida game, as well as pick six for the week ahead. Caleb, what's up, man?
How's it going, man? It was a good week. It's good to be back.
Man, I am rejuvenated from the game. You know, it's that point of the year where it's just so exciting to be in the mix, and Georgia is very much in the mix, starting to get optimistic. You know that meme of Michael Scott where he's like, I'm ready to get hurt again. Like, I'm almost there. So let's do this. Let's do this. But yeah, man, I wanted to start off by going through what we did at the beginning of the season with several games, which is the good, the bad, and the ugly from this one. Starting with the good, Caleb, what'd you see on Saturday that you're excited about?
Well, obviously, Jake Fromm's play, the quarterback play, yes, on third down. I mean, that was it seemed like record-breaking things, what he was doing. Just every third down was just like kind of a guarantee that we'd get that third down. And that's kind of where it seems like we've struggled a little bit. And so really great adjustment by Coley or Fromm or the both of them, whoever, and dialing up some stuff and really coming through on the third down.
Yeah, absolutely. Felt like we opened up the offense just overall a little bit. It wasn't a full spread offense or anything crazy like that. But to piggyback on what you said earlier about Jake Fromm on third down, I got this stat here in my notes. 10 for 13 on third down for 119 yards and one TD. That is ballin'. And you got to give some credit to Todd Grantham over there. Third and Grantham has always been a thing, as we know. and so it's good to be on the other side of that. Something that contributed to Jake Fromm's baller status on Saturday was a group that never gets enough credit and always gets too much criticism, the offensive line. Caleb, do you see how much space there was around Jake Fromm when he was making decisions in the pocket?
Yeah, he had all day, and it was really good to see that offensive line really step up and just give him that time. Because when he has time, I mean, he can do a lot of things. There's a lot of times where he almost had too much time, and he just kind of would wiggle around. He got some rushing yards too, so that was cool.
Yeah, and I'll say this. In my opinion, Fromm has improved drastically from last year to this year, and I don't know if it's philosophical change from coordinators or if it's just his development. But last year, there were so many times where it felt like if he felt pressure, he would just kind of hug the ball and embrace for contact. And now he's either throwing it away or looking for some space where he can either – he had that one time where he cleared out and found Cager open and just missed him on the throw that otherwise would have been a very Aaron Rodgers-like play, or just scramble for a couple yards, get some positive yards instead of losing a couple yards. So he's much improved in that area, and it benefited us big time against Florida. Outside of that, Andrew Thomas, Solomon Kinley, I think that left side of the offensive line that we're going to be losing next year has been so, so good for us, both in the run game and the passing game. But, of course, Isaiah Wilson had a great game as well. On the other side of the ball, the defense is something that we've taken for granted because we always talk about the offense. We always talk about the issues and where we've improved. This defense, without having any big-name Roquan Smith-type top 10 picks, has statistically been the best in the SEC and one of the best in the country, and they certainly looked the part on Saturday.
Yeah, I like how they put pressure on Trask. Mm-hmm. There's a few times where he just kind of seemed like he was just didn't know where to go with it and real pressured. And not really getting him on the ground, but just making him feel pressured, I think we did a pretty good job with that. So that was really good to see.
Yeah. And we talked about third down offense. Third down defense was just as good. I mean, we really won the game on third down and kept Florida from making plays at the biggest moments. And I want to give a little shout out to that defensive line because that's an area that's been a perceived weakness for Georgia all season and going into the season, even in the off season. Jordan Davis, Devontae Wyatt, Malik Herring, Trayvon Walker. I mean, that group was absolutely phenomenal against Florida. And I know partially Florida has an inexperienced offensive line. Oh, Tyler Clark's another one I should have mentioned. But that group, man, they were just stopping the run and moving the line back on passing plays. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, it was really good to see just a group defensive effort because Florida has shown some bright spots in games prior to this that they can move the ball and they can score points. So mm-hmm. It was really good to see just kind of going into it, not knowing what our defense really was yet. But I think this was a staple game of just proving that we really are a legit defense to be watching out for.
Yeah. Okay, so bad and ugly. We can hit these ones fast. There wasn't a ton, obviously. But, Caleb, was there anything that you saw that you'd like to see cleaned up?
It's really hard to think of anything. We just talked about the offensive line. There was a couple of times where I forget his name, but the defensive end for Florida kind of broke through pretty easily.
Yeah.
It was really just one notable time that I noticed.
Yeah, early in the game that happened.
But that's really just really nitpicking.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing where it's like, you got to remember there's great players on both sides of the ball. I mean, that guy's a future NFL player.
Yeah.
And he got the best of, I believe it was Isaiah Wilson, one play early in the game. And outside of that, just completely dominant performance by the offensive line. So we'll take that all day, that kind of overall performance.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, I don't think this is the least nitpicky one that I can critique us on, and that's first and second down offense. We were very good on third down, but I will say we're not always going to be playing a Todd Grantham defense on third down. They were in a zone a lot of the time. Their defense, the secondary, was giving us some space, and you put that same offense against a group and press coverage on third down, it might be a different story. We need to be more productive on first and second down. We had a lot of third and longs that thankfully we converted on, but would like to see improvement in not wasted plays on first and second down. Another play that kind of stuck out to me was Matt Landers. It just seemed like a lack of effort on one that could have been a touchdown. He didn't lay out for it, and I know a lot of people were kind of upset by that on social media, but I still don't. I don't know. I'm not going to be negative about any of our players. I will say this. I think George Pickens is a player that needs to be getting more looks. But last bad thing I saw was just getting beat on some of those inside slants. Mark Webb was getting picked on for a while. That's something that we adjusted on in-game. And my one ugly is that Isaiah Wilson flop. Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely ugly. And kind of funny to watch. So
yeah, it was funny. It also was like in all seriousness, it was a good move by him as far as drawing attention to the fact that the other guy had jumped across the line to make contact. It was a funny play, and I could understand being frustrated with it if it had been like some kind of unnecessary roughness flop. But he was just drawing attention to the fact that the guy did jump offside, so. It was a fair flop, it just was, it was funny looking, and that one caught some wind on social media as well. And I forgot to mention this earlier, Caleb, but let's go ahead and do our Smash Mouth All-Star of the Week. Caleb, there's only like really two players I can think of that you could even, I don't know, it'd be like a disgrace if you didn't put them. Who do you have for this one? This is the offensive player that demonstrated composure, physicality, and toughness throughout the game.
Yeah, I kind of went back and forth on Cager and Fromm, but yep. I'm going to give it to Fromm just because of the improvement. And just being, like you said, composed, and really just showing leadership and, mm-hmm. and coming through.
Yeah.
With the skill we know he has, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. He just hadn't, really stepped into that this year. And I think this was the game for him. So I have to
yeah.
give it to him.
Yeah. He was clutch. My pick's still Cager on this one. So I can't not pick Cager. I mean, the dude was banged up. He was playing with some injuries and was an absolute dog out there, like talking, but then backing up his talk, making play after play, taking hit after hit, and tearing up that Florida Gator secondary. Savage Pats Player of the Week. This is our defensive standout. Caleb, I am curious as to who you're going to say on this one, because there's so many great players on that defense, and it's not like a Roquan team where there's one guy making all the plays. Feels like everyone's making all the plays. Who's your Savage Bats Player of the Week?
Yeah, this one's kind of fun, not because there was, like you said, a huge standout, but just because the whole defense as a whole is just very impressive. But just going off of really just one play, Azeejo Ojulari's sack, and just having a guy like that that can get back there and get the quarterback on the ground, I was impressed with his play.
Yeah, I've said it from really since – I don't know when I first said it on record, but he's always reminded me of Justin Houston. I mean, he's a big guy. He's got a quick first step. He's very physical. He knows how to get off blocks on those tackles. He was getting held all day against Florida, but he kept getting after it. And even there were some plays where he didn't end up being the one that made the tackle, but he certainly was a factor in the pass rush and against the run. Just an overall great performance from Azeez, and really like that kid. I really think he's a special player. I think he's a first rounder in the future. We'll see on that one. But I personally think this defense is so talented that no one has stood out too much. And it's not because we don't have standout players, but more because it's hard to stand out when you're in a defense full of standouts. And so I think he is one player that certainly caught my eye in this one and is deserving of that. So now I want to move into the pick six segment. For those of you that are new listeners, Caleb and I pick six games every week, and then for the extra point, we pick the score of the Georgia game as a tiebreaker. On the season, Caleb, I have 34 points, and you have 32. I was like 3 points off on the Georgia-Florida score, so staying pretty good on those. And that's what kind of gave me the lead last week. This week, first one I want to talk about is number 5, Penn State, playing on the road at 13, Minnesota. Penn State, well, both these teams are undefeated. Caleb, who do you think is going to win this one? You think Minnesota can knock Penn State out of the playoff picture?
I had a feeling that they might, but just looking at the strength of schedule that Penn State compared to Minnesota, I still got to go with Penn State just because the competition that they go against consistently is kind of puts them at the edge on this one.
Yeah, I'm going with Penn State, too. I think James Franklin's a good coach. Next game, number 20, Kansas State, is playing at Texas. Now, Texas is coming off a bye week after a loss to TCU, and, of course, earlier in the season, they lost to LSU. They also lost a close game to Oklahoma. So that's a 3-loss Texas team against a red-hot Kansas State team. They're coming off wins over TCU, Oklahoma, and Kansas. Caleb, who you got in this one? It's at Texas. Kansas State's got the hot hand.
Yeah, I think Kansas State streak stops here.
Mm-hmm.
I think coming off the bye, Texas is a little disappointed this season, but they still, you know, want to prove they're a good team. I think Tom Herman's a solid coach, and I think they'll eventually be a pretty good program. I think Texas will take this one.
Yeah, I'm going with Texas also. It's weird. It's just, they seem too good. I mean, I've watched them. They seem better than a 3-loss team for this point in the season. It's just hard to imagine them having 4 losses after this game. And at the same time, Kansas State, in my opinion, was very fortunate to win that Oklahoma game. And I don't know, I just feel like it balances out over the course of a season. So I think this is one where Texas gets the better of them. We'll find out, but it's at Texas coming off a bye week. Can't pick against them. Next one, this is going to be a low-scoring game. Number 18, Iowa at number 16, Wisconsin. Iowa's got 2 losses. One was a 10-3 loss to Michigan, and the other was a 17-12 loss to Penn State. Wisconsin lost to Illinois several weeks ago before being absolutely manhandled by Ohio State. They're coming off a bye week. Not a lot of offense between these two teams. I'll go ahead and say it. I'm picking Wisconsin. I don't think they're that good. I just don't think Iowa's that good either. Caleb, who you got?
Yeah, I kind of have the same reasoning. I think the only reason I have Wisconsin win is because it's at home, and defense seems to play really well at home with the crowd going and everything. So I think Wisconsin will edge one out.
Yeah, unfortunately for them, they're practically out of playoff contention already. Next one, and speaking of practically out of playoff contention, number 15, Notre Dame at Duke. Notre Dame's not playing their best football of late. Their last 3 games, they barely beat USC. They got blown out by Michigan, and then they beat a historically bad Virginia Tech team by 1 point this last weekend. They're out of the playoff. They're still pretty talented. I guess they got something to prove. Duke, on the other hand, they're coming off a bye week, but they lost back-to-back games to Virginia and UNC. I don't know. Could it be another Notre Dame upset? It's at Duke, coming off a bye week. Who you got, Caleb?
Yeah, I think it'll be almost a repeat of last week for Notre Dame. I think they'll barely win this one just because they're a little bit more talented.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know much about Duke, but just from looking at their schedule, I'm not that impressed. I think Notre Dame will win this.
It feels like every year, and normally they're undefeated, but it feels like every year Notre Dame has all these games where they barely beat lesser opponents. So yeah, I'm going with another one. I'm not predicting a close game necessarily, but regardless, it's hard to imagine Notre Dame losing this one in any fashion. Next one, SEC East Showdown, Vanderbilt at number 10, Florida. We all know about Florida. I could see this one being closer than it should be. Vanderbilt is a terrible football team. They've been blown out by teams like Ole Miss and UNLV, along with Georgia. But then they beat Missouri at home, and they scored 38 points in a loss to LSU. Florida is coming off a very defeating defeat. I mean, playoff hopes, SEC championship hopes, everything seems out of reach all of a sudden. And we're getting excuses from their head coach and the media. Very much a victim mentality, in my opinion. So I could see them coming out, drop off in their performance, and it sort of take a little bit away from that win for us. I don't know. I could see it happening. I'm still picking Florida. If this one were at Vandy, I might feel differently. But I'm going with Florida. I think their defense is good enough to win regardless of the offensive performance.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like it could go two ways. I feel like you were saying, Florida could get kind of drop off, feel defeated, and not really have anything to play for. Or they could be just really mad and still want to fight back and possibly make something out of the season. But yeah, I'm still going to go with Florida and just...
Yeah. Last one in the pick six, number 1 LSU playing at Bryant-Denny Stadium at Alabama. Caleb, let's give our picks for this one and then go back and kind of talk through who, because most people know a lot about these two teams. They're number 1 and number 2 in the country. They're on TV every week. Who do you think wins this one?
Man, this is probably the game of the regular season right here. This is going to be so fun to watch. It's weird to think that just a few years ago when they were playing each other, these were going to be like 9-6 games, you know.
Yeah, that's changed.
One thing, and then this year is very different, which is very, really exciting. I don't think it's going to be a crazy high scoring. Like, both their offenses are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to go with – Alabama still. I'm going to go with Alabama and a field goal.
Whoa, Alabama on a field goal. That might be a first because, like, Alabama field goals don't really go well together.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be a five-yard field goal.
A five-yard field goal.
No. Yeah, it'll be really close, I think.
Okay.
One by a field goal.
Wow. Yeah, here's my thinking on this one. In my opinion, the win in my head that put LSU on the national spotlight as a potential number one team in the country was their victory over a Texas team that at the time we thought was a top 10 team. So Texas has since dropped off the rankings, and it turns out they're not that good. And then LSU's 3-point win over Auburn helped them jump to number one. But then Auburn followed up that game with a pitiful performance at home against Ole Miss. It's causing many to question how quality of a win that really was. So much has been made about LSU's offense, and rightfully so. Joe Brady has done a phenomenal job with Joe Burrow, and the LSU offense may be the most fun offense to watch in all of college football. I certainly enjoy watching them when I get the chance, but I think pundits have a tendency to overvalue offense and undervalue defense when they're evaluating a team. And don't get me wrong, LSU's defense is talented, though they did lose Divinity to, I think he was kicked off the team, so that's going to be a huge loss for them. But this is a group, regardless of talent, that gave up 38 points to Texas, 38 points to Vanderbilt, 28 points to Florida. So to me, that raises concerns going into a game against a team with arguably the nation's most prolific passer and the nation's best group of receivers. So if you look at Alabama, have they beaten anybody good or anybody as good as the teams LSU has beat? No, but they haven't had the opportunity to yet. They've won all the games they should have won, and this is practically the only game on their schedule when it comes to teams that actually pose a threat to them. So, yes, this Alabama defense has given up some points to teams like Ole Miss and Texas A&M, so I do expect LSU to have some success offensively, but to me, a hungry Alabama team with their first and possibly only opportunity to prove their worth this season beats LSU, and I do think it's going to be a high-scoring battle between two high-scoring offenses. I think it'll be an electric atmosphere. Apparently the president's going to be there, but I actually think what differentiates Alabama from LSU in this one is I think the Alabama defense makes a play or two that really changed this one. So I'm going with Alabama as well. I don't know which team I would rather face, but it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not going to change the outcome of the game, so we'll see what happens on this one. But we both went with Bama. It's just hard to pull against them this time of year.
Yeah, whatever happens, it'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I'd like to see how healthy Tua.
Yeah, they're calling him a game-time decision. They're calling him a game-time decision. I would be shocked if he doesn't start the game for them. So I think it's one of those coaching things where they're, like, trying to keep the other team on edge, even though everybody kind of knows. But we'll see what happens. So we got to do our extra point, Caleb. Missouri at Georgia. Missouri's been an odd team this season. They lost their opener against Wyoming. Everyone wrote them off. Then they steamrolled West Virginia, South Carolina. And then they lost two straight to Vanderbilt and Kentucky. So they're all over the place. Let's say our picks at the same time. So I'll do the countdown. Okay. So it'll be 3, 2, 1. Then we'll make our pick. All right. You ready?
I am.
You're coming up with it now.
Yeah. I'm coming up with it right now.
All
right. But the score, how we do it on the same time, you know, the countdown
or
whatever. It always like in my side, like I do it at the same time, but in the recording, it's always like delayed or something.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
I know it does that.
Let you know that
it does that, but I can't hear it while you're like I hear it while you're saying it. So there's no way for you to copy me or me to copy you. So it still works.
Okay, I just want to make sure you know that I'm not like an idiot and saying it way late.
For those of you listening, wow, Caleb's an idiot. He thinks like it's 3, 2, 1, and then you wait like for the other person to say it, and then you go, which would defeat the purpose. So, Caleb, yeah. Going everyone.
I thought you wait 3 seconds after one.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, 37
35, 7.
Oh, that's pretty close. Okay.
Yeah.
You said 35-7. I said 37-10. Yeah. So let me give you my reasoning. I'm really getting 2012 vibes from this Georgia team. And that was the team that lost to South Carolina. Looked shaky against Kentucky. Squeezed out a win over a top 10 Florida team. And then absolutely crushed the remaining regular season opponents to position themselves for a shot at a national championship appearance in the SEC championship game. This score was Georgia's exact score against Ole Miss in their first game after that Florida game. And I see a similar kind of game coming. I see a defense that stops the run and is able to get after Kelly Bryant in the passing game. And I see an offense that has gained some confidence from last week's success against Florida and is able to get on a roll for the remainder of the season. So Florida game was crucial for this team, and I truly believe that victory will spark a run where Georgia will finally play their best football down the stretch at the most crucial time this season. I picked the score because that was our score against Ole Miss after the Florida game in 2012.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think that our defense has really found themselves, and I think the rest of the season we're just going to start building on that, getting stronger. I think this game, Kelly Bryant always, at least always has kind of scared me a little bit, just how talented he is. He's not really, you know, a prolific quarterback, but the strength that he has with his running ability scares me a little bit time to time, but I have complete faith in our defense. So I think we can pull that.
Yeah.
I think Missouri has struggled, on the road and done really well at home. So for that reason, being at Sanford Stadium, I think it's going to be a really tough task for them to do anything.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm really hopeful Georgia's going to be hot and just roll through these teams. So they got to stay focused. They got to take it one game at a time and treat every game like it is the SEC championship until they're there. Caleb, just curious, LSU, Alabama, what team do you think we match up better with if we're able to make it, you know, to the SEC championship game?
Well, my first thought is LSU, just mainly because of the points that you pointed out earlier, is the defense. I think Alabama's defense is not as talented as it has been in years past, but I do think they're a pretty good defense. LSU, on the other hand, I think they have some holes in their defense that I think we could find a way to exploit. Offensively, Tua just scares me, and I don't like going against that matchup. Even though we did well against them in the SEC championship, I just feel like that Saban has the ability to draw something up that we might not be prepared for. I think LSU might be a little bit better of a matchup for us.
Yeah, so I actually differ on this one. My reasoning is, I feel like Kirby has Bama's number more than people realize. If you look at those last two games against Alabama, we should have won those two games. We at least were in a position to win each of those games. I mean, we were within a play of winning both of those games. And so, to me, Bama's the kind of team that you can drag them down into like a slow drag-out, knockout fight where it's low-scoring, a lot of defense, and it comes down to just one or two plays. And unfortunately, we've been on the losing side of that, yes, but it's still the kind of football that Georgia is comfortable playing. LSU, on the other hand, do I feel like we can hold them under 28 points scoring? I don't know that I can say that with how aggressive they are and how much they attack in the passing game, but how balanced they are with the running game as well. They keep you honest, and so to me, I feel like LSU might drag us into a shootout, and it's not that we're not capable of that, but we're certainly not experienced in those kind of games like they are, and it's much more their comfort level. Whereas against Alabama, I feel like we can drag them out of their comfort level and into ours, which is exactly what we did last year. So I say Alabama. Am I pulling for Alabama in this game? I don't know, because I don't want to see another Georgia-Alabama loss where there's that narrative that we can't get past Alabama. I'd much rather that be LSU if we're not going to win the game. But I feel like we probably have a better shot against Alabama because of Kirby's familiarity with their staff and their coaching. their tendencies. I mean, last year it felt like we anticipated everything they did as a defense. Unfortunately, they anticipated quite a bit of what we did as well, including I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about it. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm going to have a hard time watching that game because I can't really pull for either team because whoever wins, it could end up being worse for us having to play them. We'll just see what happens, and we're going to have to play who we have to play. Ultimately, if we're going to make the playoff, we got to be the better team, and we got to focus on ourselves. So it'll be fun, though. It'll be fun to be in the mix and, you know, assuming – I'm not going to assume anything. Hoping that Georgia takes care of business these next couple weeks. Obviously, Missouri be tough just to be focused after such a big game. Auburn will be tough because their defense is so good, and it's on the plains at Jordan-Hare. After that, we got Texas A&M. We know they can put up some points. And then, of course, Georgia Tech at Georgia Tech. It's exciting. Exciting to be in the mix. Georgia-Florida game was huge. Georgia-Missouri game is a game I'm very much looking forward to see if we can continue playing at a high level and continue that moving forward going into Auburn week. So I think this game is a big one for us.
Yeah, I agree with your reasoning on the LSU-Alabama. I think my emotions were a little involved in that, my thought process for it, because if we were to – if that was going to happen again, you know, the whole losing at the very end thing,
I just don't know
if I could handle that again. So I guess that's kind of my emotional reasoning behind I'd rather play LSU type decision.
Yeah, I actually gave up emotions a couple years ago just from being a Georgia football fan. And so those don't take effect when I'm making decisions about what team to pull for. It's purely fact. I'm a robot now.
Yeah. I might need to try to transfer that because I'm a little exhausted.
No, I try not to be emotional about it because I know it can hurt you and it's not worth getting hurt over, but it's also so fun when it pays off, you know? I mean, do you remember that SEC championship game against Auburn when it was me and you and we were going crazy at the bins, realizing we were going to go to the playoff? And, man, it would be sweet to be back. So it's just – you don't want to get your hopes up, but it's so tempting to because it's such a joy, just the process of getting there and watching the team become what they're capable of. So – we'll see what happens. But Caleb, as always, it's been great having you on. And let's root on those Dogs this week.
Let's do it. Come on, Dogs. Let's just hold it off till the SEC championship.
That's right. And that wraps up Mizzou week on our show. Thank you so much for listening and for sharing. You guys are the best. I will not be attending this one unless someone has an extra ticket. But to those of you traveling to Athens for the Mizzou game, travel safe and be loud for me. Go Dogs.